Support this podcast via our Patreon and get more writerly goodness. Visit patreon.com/nanocast to join up.
Welcome to The Everyday Novelist. My name is J. Daniel Sawyer. I'm the author of some 27 books, 34 short stories, and numerous articles and scripts and essays, and I am your guide on this journey to raise your productivity to pulp speed levels and to explore the cracks and crevices of business and craft in the writing life.
Welcome to The Questions, episode 581.
A few days ago, I got an email from a student at a high school somewhere in California who has taken it upon himself to write a book for a class. So he sent me a list of questions by way of consulting an expert, which was evidently a class requirement. These are mostly fairly basic questions, but they open some interesting vistas, and he asks them in a very clever way that you all who are further along might really enjoy, and that those of you who are joining me because it's your first NaNoWriMo, or because you're earlier in your career than some of the longtime listeners here, might find really interesting and beneficial. So, in addition to answering his questions directly, I am putting them on the show. Today we hear from Jason, and for the next several days we will be hearing from Jason, who asks,
I am a student at...
Wouldn't you like to know?
High school, and we are doing an independent study where we are tasked to choose a certain project to work on for 10 weeks in which we will become a so-called expert in that certain topic.
Well, thank you for writing in, and first of all, let me applaud your skepticism about the ability to become an expert in 10 weeks. You are obviously a man who already has an idea about how vast the universe is. Congratulations, it's a good start.
The topic that I have chosen to work on is a novella, which is why I'm asking for some clarification on several questions I have about continually writing. My current story is about a world where if one were to kill a magic user, they steal the power that their prey has possessed. The story follows a group of characters trying to live life while being chased because of the power that they have obtained.
That sounds like a beautifully macabre premise with lots of potential. Also, sounds vaguely like The Highlander. Actually, there's a lot of stories that have used this premise. The Highlander is one that's done it, and there's a whole bunch more I'll tell you about in a second. But one of the things that can help you with any story in developing it, if you've got a strong premise like this, the chances are good that someone's been there before. And it's not because you're not being original, it's because you're drawing from a common well of cultural heritage, whether you realize it or not. And creativity comes from combining different elements that are already in your cultural heritage. And it's the combination of those things that gives rise to the new and the unique and the different. And that means frequently people will come up with stuff that's substantially similar or that is obviously of a piece. It's just like humans. Every human is unique in the universe, but they strongly resemble their parents because they're half of their genetic material is from each parent. So if you find out who's been there before, you've got a resource to fall back on if you get really stuck, and you've also got an idea of what's on the field that has already been explored. So you can sort of see the blank spaces easier, and you can also see the well-trod paths that you might want to stick to for portions of your story. It's an awareness thing. This story idea that you've got is very fertile, and it's very old, and I mean that in the best possible sense. The notion that to eat something is to take on its properties is as old as recorded human civilization. We get it everywhere, even in our language today. You are what you eat. It shows up everywhere. It's the basis for fad diets. For example, all of my childhood and for most of my adult life, everyone believed that eating fat is what caused you to gain weight, which is something that metabolic research has gotten sophisticated enough now to disentangle and start to call into question that basic intuition. But that basic intuition is based on you are what you eat. You take on the properties of the thing that you ingest. It becomes part of you. And this same way of thinking is the foundation for rituals in almost every religion I have ever read about. early primitive peoples who worshipped the spirit of the bear, for example, would hunt and eat the flesh of the bear and wear the bear's skin in order to take on the spiritual essence of the bear, which was seen as very important because bears have a way of being that's kind of similar to tribal humans. They're fierce warriors, they're loyal family providers, they create homes, they set up shelters, they support their children, they play with each other. And this was the most powerful creature in nature in Europe and Asia in the temperate zones. And this religion goes way, 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 way back. Shows up in cave paintings 20, 30,000 years ago. Long time ago. The ancient Egyptians used the same kind of idea when they were worshipping, I think it was Osiris, who was a grain god. They would take on the spirit and essence of the grain god by having a ritual meal of bread and beer, both of which are made from wheat and barley. And they would have their sacred meal. It would make them one with the god. The ancient Greeks did the same thing with wine and Dionysus, who is the god of wine and frolicking and drunken misbehavior. And the Christians used a similar idea for the foundation of the Eucharist. And Catholics take it very literally, and Protestants take it much more metaphorically, and the Orthodox are somewhere in between. But the idea that you're eating the body and blood of Christ in order to become of one flesh with the Redeemer and the Son of God, in order to become a Son of God in the eyes of God, so that you will be redeemed and made one with God the Father, is the same way of thinking. This is rooted in our biology. We eat things, they make us feel better, we're filled with energy, we're obviously taking on the spiritual energy of the things that we eat, right? Well, maybe not the spiritual energy, but we're certainly consuming the chemical energy and it's fueling us. You know, the spirituality aspect, now that's between you and whatever gods you happen to like or don't believe in. So literally or symbolically, this thing goes all the way back. And in contemporary popular culture, the vampire and the werewolf legends partake of this same sort of thinking. The vampire takes another person's life force by drinking their blood. The werewolf transmits its immortality and curse through a bite. You see where this is going. And like I said, the Highlander. In the Highlander series, every immortal that gets killed, all his knowledge and experience, or at least his enduring power and strength, depending on which version of the Highlander you're watching, because they're all different about this, gets transmitted to the person who's just beheaded them, until at the very end, the winner of the prize gets mortality and all the knowledge and experience of everyone that came before them. So to kill something, to conquer them, is to take on their essence, to acquire their powers. This is a very, very rich and fertile ground that you have picked to mine. So have a lot of fun. And if you get stuck, there are a lot of places, both the ones I just listed and thousands more, that you can go to for inspiration and solidarity. I will be back tomorrow with your next question. Until then, good luck. The Everyday Novelist is written and presented by J. Daniel Sawyer and is produced by Artistic Whispers Productions, Incorporated. The text is copyright 2018 by J. Daniel Sawyer, and the production is copyright 2018 Artistic Whispers Productions. This podcast is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License, and all other rights are reserved to their respective owners.